Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Did you see that our appeal to the Friends of DeSoto to put pressure on Adam Ragusa to begin work on the music for a next edition of Greatest Gen?
Yeah.
Has happened.
I felt really bad when I thought it happened.
I felt exactly the same. Adam Ragusa, such a mensch.
Yeah.
Such a great part of our show and the fabric of the show, and like very generous in a number of ways.
He saw the fun in it, I think. But
God, I hope so. I really hope so, man.
Well, what he put out on Twitter was, yes, it's a yes. The issue is I don't have time to dig through 175 episodes of a show and find the drops that need to be collected. Mm-hmm. So it's a crowdsourcing opportunity. If you out there know about a thing someone says on Voyager that is funny or ridiculous and could be Picard songified by Adam Ragusa, you're encouraged to tweet time code at him for this project. I think another thing that greased the skids is that Cyrus Farivar made like a donation in Adam Ragusa's name to a food bank, which I think is another cool way to...
That is some real passive aggression right there. Holy shit, that's fucked up. I respected the game, but man, you can't say no to a food bank donation.
No,
you
know? No.
Who's the asshole now?
It is possible to me that they talked about that ahead of time. Like, if you're willing to donate in my name to something, I'll give it some consideration. But maybe Cyrus just shot first and then turned to Ragusa and was like, well, I made the donation. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah, it seems like blackmail or something.
Yeah. It also, you know, we should all be donating to food banks, whether or not we're using it to blackmail people.
That's a good policy.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we're obligated now. I wasn't prepared to make any kind of announcement. I don't think we made an announcement on the episode where we were talking about blackmailing the goose.
No.
But I guess if the goose is involved, we're obligated, aren't we?
We're obligated. It's happening. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a big Voyager stan.
I've seen maybe an episode of Voyager.
Wow.
I've seen so little of it, it's nuts.
Well, there's a long and rich tradition of Star Trek podcasts that are like, one of the hosts has seen every episode, and the other host is a total noob.
I don't want to do a show like that. There's a million shows like that out there.
It's not going to be a million shows, Adam. It's going to be our show.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. We do a pretty good Star Trek show.
We don't have that, but we do have this.
Yeah, so what are we going to do? We're going to take our customary break. We're going to do our award show. How do we want to play this?
Yeah, so we will get to the end of Deep Space Nine, and then we will do the 90s, the award show where we come up with a bunch of invented award categories and give out awards, our Mount Armus, our Mount Nuckmore episodes. Yeah. We talk about the drunkest Shimode. All of these things. Another thing to look forward to with Voyager, Adam, I don't know if you've been following along with this in the drunkshimoda@gmail.com inbox, but I've been in communication with Felipe and Craig, the illustrator and coder, respectively, of the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets.
They're so great.
We're getting a couple of new squares put on there.
Did you ask for more fucking ladders in that game?
I did. That's actually a game mechanic that we're talking about adding, is not all chutes, some ladders. Because right now it's
cool.
It's oops all chutes.
Wow. I'm looking forward to unveiling that.
Yeah.
That'll be a lot of fun.
I agree.
God, we're so lucky to have such talented people.
Yeah.
Involved in our show.
The Friends of DeSoto rule.
Because if it were just us, it'd be a real season one Greatest Generation situation where it's just us sucking ass for 27 episodes until we get our shit together.
Yeah.
We are going to watch every single episode of Star Trek The Next Generation in chronological order.
I think we differ quite a bit in terms of our hope for this show's popularity. I personally hope that no one listens.
Yeah, that's a
and this is the vanity press of podcasts.
Yeah.
Several of the first five episodes I recorded on an iPad with software that like looked like it was pro, but the sound was not pro.
We should go back and do George Lucas remastered episodes. Let's go back.
On Mabuki.
I want to step on some Jabba tails.
Yeah.
Go back and re-record every line of dialogue.
Yeah, and delete some things that we regret.
Yeah, what an opportunity that would be.
Yeah, digitally replace some of the guns with radios.
That's how you do it.
My whole life I was told there's going to be three prequel films and a trilogy after the original trilogy also. And then we got the three prequel films, and I was young enough to like them when they came out.
Mm-hmm. Concentrate on the moment. Feel. Don't think.
And then I, you know, went and dutifully saw all of the new trilogy. And then I did my rewatch recently because I was like, I've never actually watched like the whole thing in order, including Solo and Rogue One. And watching those prequels and the like remastered original series is fucking crazy. One thing I found out, you know, in the pod race when Sebulba's pod crashes?
I think about it all the time.
His swear is poodoo, which we know means fodder. He swears by saying fodder.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you can only get from from a deep, deep rewatch.
Yeah. Jabba the Hutt told his enemies he would turn them into bantha fodder, and fodder is a swear? It's just food. Give me a fucking break, Sebulba. Come up with some more creative swears. Especially if it's going to be in a different language, why not make it ultra vulgar, you know? The kids in the audience aren't going to care.
Ultra vulgar. That's what I like.
Yeah.
Call me crazy. Call me a pervert.
That's what this show is. And that's why we're Star Trek fans, Adam.
When we put our show up for scheduled release, like we'll go into the thing, we'll upload our episode, we'll schedule it. We get the option. Is it clean? Is it explicit? Is it ultra vulgar? You better believe we're clicking ultra vulgar every time.
Yeah, yeah. It comes out with the record industry standard sticker, parental advisory, ultra vulgar lyrics.
Are parental advisory stickers still a thing?
Like
if you buy physical CDs or records, I have continued to buy vinyl records, but I don't remember seeing that little stamp on anything that I've bought.
I haven't seen that either. It's been a long time since I've had a new inbox CD in my hand.
No parents are being advised anymore.
No. I mean, that was a lot of like Tipper Gore, Laura Bush bullshit back in the day.
Sure was.
Anyways.
Boy, am I glad we avoided that. Yeah, boy oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about in this episode. Ben, I'm going to try not to get us canceled as we discuss Season 7 of Deep Space Nine. It's episode 9.
It's our last episode 9 about Deep Space Nine.
It's Covenant.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So we start with a scene in the bar. Let's establish that Quark and Esri are part of the show before we turn away from most of our main characters for most of the episode. Odo is, I guess they're having like a Sunday morning drink. I guess I don't know that the Bajorans meet for their worship services on Sunday mornings. That's a very Christianity-centric way of assessing what's going on here.
If you could only hear yourselves.
I do really love the division of people. Like, some people watch the football on Sunday morning and others get up to go to church. And I like how Kira is not the type to try to coerce her friends to go to church with her if what they really want to do is have the brunch. Good for Kira.
Yeah, there is a lot of respect in the relationship between Kira and Odo. There's a... You know, Odo respects Kira's beliefs, and Kira respects Odo's lack of belief in a way that I think is, like, remarkably healthy, given what a rocky start their relationship has had.
Maybe the healthiest part is that, God, I feel like so many people fall into this trap where you can't say something positive about a thing without being invited to do the thing that you said something positive about. Odo's like, you know, I really think it's cool, and I wish I could feel the way she does, but it's too bad that I don't. And Kira doesn't pivot that into, oh, well, I should just bring you to church until you finally get it. Like, like we're gonna beat this religion into you. It's gonna be awesome. Yeah. She lets it go.
That really is so sweet.
Vedic Fala is offering some conversion classes that you could easily sign up for. No. That's not where she heads with it. It's, you know, Star Trek has traditionally kind of distanced itself from digging into issues of religion previous to Deep Space Nine. Religion has always been treated as kind of a regrettable element of humanity's past, but this is a show that deals with a lot of aliens that aren't human. So I think that gives them an opportunity to, like, both talk about things like this without breaking canon.
To the extent that I almost feel like there are opportunities to go further that I don't believe that they take for fear of alienating a viewership or going out on too much of a limb. I think an example of this is Odo expressing a regret about not having faith in a higher power. And there's something about that that is so interesting to me because Odo is a god.
Right. He's too busy being a god to believe in other gods.
And, like, there's a real Dr. Manhattan kind of pathos to him that he could have if only the writers would encourage it. Like, that's never the pathos that he's dealing with. He's trying to cement himself into the class that he lives with. He's not trying to have any aspirations towards becoming better than the life that he's had and the friends that he's had up until now.
I think that there's a distinction there, though, because, like, while the founders are considered gods by the various client races of the Dominion, they are not snap your fingers and change something about reality gods. They're more like god kings in a way, you know.
What rises to the threshold of god? Like, this is a here's a question.
Yeah.
Like, what are the superpowers that qualify as godlike versus just, is it immortality? Is that where it begins and ends?
The wormhole alien slash prophets are the kind of god where it's sufficiently advanced technology indistinguishable from, you know? And I think that that's the tension that runs throughout Deep Space Nine. Like, is Starfleet going to acknowledge their godhood, or are they going to always continue to talk about them as a hyper-advanced alien intelligence that we just don't understand and, you know, probably won't for a long time because our technology is too primitive by comparison? And Deep Space Nine is well written enough that I think that they get it both ways. Like, it's kind of column A for some characters, column B for others, and for Sisko, a little bit of both.
Yeah. Boy, it is the worship is pervasive on DS9, isn't it?
It sure is.
It's a complicated subject, Odo.
Anyways, after this hang, Kira is in her quarters and gets a visit from a Vedic she knows from way back in the day, from back in the labor camps that she grew up in. This is Vedic Fala.
I'm going to refer to him as this Vedic fella.
this Vedic fella over here. Boy, yeah. We've been talking a little bit about how Kira's nose ridges seem somewhat diminished in late Deep Space Nine. I feel like all of the leftover loaf went onto this guy's nose.
Yeah, he got two scoops.
His ridges are fucking out of control, man.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
How many people besides your parents have known you for your whole life? Because this Vedic fella has known Kira since she was tiny, and it is such a power imbalance in an interesting way to be dropped in on by this Vedic fella who knows your whole deal.
Right. He's got a sort of fatherly relationship with her in the way that a clergy member sometimes can with a member of the faithful. And he uses that trust for a fucked up reason.
That's what makes you different from all the other Vedics I know.
Yeah, especially because she accepts it as a gift, and it is not, because the stone wrapped in a cloth ends up transporting her far away, and we go with her to Empok Nor.
We know right where we are before Kira does, because we see the exterior establishing shot, and it's the station but tilty. This is an Empok Nor that has been taken over by the Branch Parathians, who are no longer just a cult of Bajorans. They are now led by none other than Gul Dukat.
I'm sure you have many questions, Norris.
Gul Dukat has made a Parath megachurch on Epoch Nor. It does not fit in with the rest of the Quadrant's design aesthetic.
Yeah, there were a lot of complaints from neighbors when they put in the building permits.
Yeah.
But because of, you know, probably some greased palms at City Hall, he was able to ram these plans through and actually get it built.
Just a massive building, massive draw on resources.
The fucking traffic it creates on the weekends is crazy.
Pays no quadrant taxes. Gul Dukat gets that evil guy step into the light, like that moment you see in superhero films where you put the camera at about waist height.
Yeah.
And you give a guy a little bit of a cowboy shot, turns to camera, walks into the light. It's a great reveal. It's a good moment.
Yeah. There was that episode where they put Mark Alamo in Bajoran loaf, and I thought it was interesting to see him kind of, I mean, like, he's in the Cardassian loaf here, but he's in the Bajoran getup, and I feel like it's nice that we have comps of the whole spectrum for him.
He's wearing the Bajoran earring. So yeah. He's got some dangle on that lobe.
It's a symbol of the titular covenant that he's made with the Branch Parathians. And he has summoned Kira to him. Not summoned, shanghaied her to Empok Nor to try and inculcate her into this cult.
We get a lot of exposition over the scenes that follow. And the case that he makes is that he represents the counterpoint to the Sisko, where the Sisko is on Team Wormhole Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Dukat is the Parath emissary.
He is.
He's the Dukat.
And he has really, like, figured out a way to invert the whole Bajoran religion to make the case that the wormhole aliens in standing idly by and allowing the occupation to happen were in fact the real criminals in the occupation. He was merely their instrument and is now repenting for that. The Parathes were ejected from the Celestial Temple because they wanted to take a more active role in Bajoran affairs. They wanted to break the wormhole alien prime directive and really get in there.
Just like the tilted Empok Nor Ben, Gul Dukat's whole worldview is just really twisted, right?
The Paw Wraiths are not what you think, Norris.
Praising the Dark Lord. I mean, like, I feel like it's one thing to embrace a kind of novel, upside-down reading of a religious text, but when the whole aesthetic attendant to that is, like, lots of, like, gloomy lighting and red accents, it's like, I mean, you're saying that you're not evil, but your whole aesthetic is very specifically haunted house.
Yeah, you can't help but make that comparison throughout. Kira evokes the name of Jadzia Dax during Dukat's explanation.
Yeah.
And Dukat shrugs it off in a way that evil people with power often do.
Yeah, he gives some lip service to the idea that he regrets that she's got in the way while he was trying to help the Paw Wraith get into the wormhole and force the prophets out. And I wonder how much they, like, wrote this at Rick Berman. They, like, yeah, what a shame that, you know, we had to, like, kill her or whatever. But, you know, I had a thing I had to do, so.
It was purely out of self-serving reasons.
That, like, one of the bits of dialogue they probably wrote out that would confirm your suspicion, Ben, is like, Dukat's like, yeah, Jadzia Dax, very beautiful woman, very unfortunate.
She was lucky to be there, honestly.
Gul Dukat. Dukat. Gul Dukat. So.
Dukat seems like he's in need of a witness in Kira. He also needs a Tammy Faye Baker. He wants Kira to be involved in this thing.
Yeah, but she just doesn't have the lashes for it.
No.
Or the willingness to betray her own faith the way Vedic Fala does. And that's another great scene we get, which is the confrontation she has with Fala after her big scene with Dukat. Like, Fala comes and talks to her in the room that she's been locked in, and he claims to have been a red armband since the, like, waning days of the occupation.
It's helped me make sense of the suffering we all had to endure.
He is a Vedic who lost his faith in the prophets a long time ago, but stayed a Vedic.
Kira is incredulous about this because she's like, dude, you got us through the occupation the real way, the prophet way, not the Paw Wraith way. What are you talking about?
Yeah, like, were you saying shit you didn't really believe?
And this Vedic fella guy is like, yeah, I mean, I said what I needed to say to get us through a hard time. Sorry. He's been a Wraith Lord all the way back to the occupation.
That shit is crazy.
You know how often I've heard those words used to describe us?
He calls Dukat the master, which is a little skin crawly.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a tip to any religious leaders, any leader, really, any leader of any kind. Don't let your subordinates call you the master. I think if they do, it means something very bad has happened.
Yeah. There's a little CSI moment in Kira's quarters back on DS9 where Sisko and Odo and Worf and O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Are looking at the evidence. She was beamed out by a Dominion-style transporter, and they know that there was a transponder involved, but they don't really have any way of finding her or tracing the transporter because she went missing, like, way, way before anyone noticed she was missing.
You must suspend the disbelief involved with whatever happened to the Vedic fella. Because,
yeah,
like, they're trying to figure out what happened to Kira. O'Brien finds the rag that the stone was in that transported her away.
Yeah.
But they've got no cameras in any part of the station that might have seen this Vedic fella.
Yeah.
Coming or going, or how he left the station.
This Vedic fella could have had another transponder, I suppose, but I don't know why he didn't just transport with Kira in that moment. It seems like more for dramatic reasons, so that it's a reveal that he's also there later.
Well, you got to get that shot, reverse shot moment after Kira beams away. You got to cut back over to this Vedic fella looking satisfied at what he's done.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to get to the next scene without that, Ben?
I don't know, Adam. I just don't know. I don't know how you possibly write your way around that puzzle.
Yeah. This is, I think, maybe the only scene of the investigation into what happened to Kira. Like, they...
Yeah.
There is no B story here.
That's not a B story. It's head faint, but not B story.
Right.
And we really, like, don't spend any more time with that crew for a lot of the rest of the episode.
They got us working in shifts.
It makes that combined with how Kira is in her environment really tamps down the tension. It puts the tension on the idea of this religion being made and Dukat being its leader.
Yeah.
But it totally dials down any sort of danger that Kira is in at any point. And I wonder why it's like that, because why not give us a greater element of danger? Why not make us fearful for Kira's safety? That seems to be off the table right away.
She doesn't seem particularly worried. We don't get the sense from Dukat that he is, like, interested in murdering her if she doesn't agree to whatever he's doing.
I guess we've got 7 seasons of proof that if what Dukat wanted to do was murder Kira, he would have done it already.
Right. So that Vedic Fala guy is interested in explaining how their little society that they're building on Imparknar works. So he gives her a tour of the station.
Now we're installing these guardrails for safety on the second level of Terak Nuar.
We're using this MIG welder, which you can rent at a local home center. But it does take a little bit of training to operate properly, so we recommend hiring a professional for a job like this.
This being a religious cult, we've had all the females ask permission to become pregnant. Here we have Mira, who's just about ready to pop.
If she does need a cesarean section,
the aforementioned TIG welder will come in handy.
Jesus. Yuck.
Ben, did you notice this is a 2-minute sequence that begins on the top floor, goes down the circular staircase, comes back toward the camera? It's 2 minutes long. There's a number of beats. There's interactions with background actors.
I think it's impossible to escape that this is an homage to the pool party scene in Boogie Nights, because at one point they jump in the pool and you see Kira swim away from the camera, and then the camera comes back up out of the pool and you're like, how do they do it?
I don't know how they cleared the Spill the Wine song for this. It was great.
I don't know if you've seen the show Pen 15, but we just started watching season 2 of that, and there is a perfect homage to the Boogie Nights pool party scene in episode 1 of season 2 that I think you'll really love.
I haven't seen that show yet. It's been on my list for a while, but I'll elevate it to the top.
It's fucking great, and just imagine pool party scene, but it's middle school, and you can do the math.
Yeah, you can.
They meet a character named Benyon, who is sort of the painter of light of the branch Parathians. He's doing a totally gross Thomas Kincaid painting of Dukat and his followers.
I like this one. The dog, one dog goes one way and the other dog goes the other way.
I don't understand why he brought you here.
Benyon looks like Matt Damon with another foot of height and maybe another 30 pounds of chiseled muscle.
And another 15 pounds of hair.
I thought this guy was a very striking individual.
I feel like he must have been a 90s television that guy.
Yeah,
like, what are the chances he wasn't, like, arraigned in, like, original Law and Order for whacking his wife or something like that, you know?
How could he not have been in Melrose Place? Like, I'm actually going to click on his name to rule that out. He was in Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Wow.
That checks out.
He does have serious Dr. Quinn energy.
You know what? He wasn't in that much. He was in television shows of the 90s, and then he came back for a short project with Jane Seymour called Dr. Quinn Morphine Woman.
Is that like an after-school special about Dr. Quinn getting totally strung out?
This isn't your grandma's, Dr. Quinn.
He directed a video short in 2019. So it looks like he may have pivoted to behind the camera stuff instead of in front of it. But I don't know how you do that when you look like this guy. I think you got to stay in front of the camera, bud.
The camera wants Jason Leland Adams.
How tall is he? I got to find that out because maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's hard to get a job when you're 6'4".
Yeah, you can't be an astronaut when you're 6'4". So why should you be able to be an actor also?
How tall is Mark Alamo? He's 6 feet tall. This guy clearly has like 4 or 5 inches on him. There's a scene later on where stretchy Matt Damon just towers over him. And that's something that you never see on Deep Space Nine. Gul Dukat is the tall guy in the room most days.
Yeah, him and Worf, often the tallest.
Yeah.
Kira starts kind of putting the screws to this guy because he's got a baby coming and she is very critical of this religion. But Benyon he's very self-assured in his belief system in such a way that he is not an evangelist. He's like, you don't believe that shit? Fine. It's like, you know, he's like David Putty. He's like, you're the one going to hell.
Yeah, and like Kira is not taking thinly veiled shots at him and his beliefs. Like she's sport fucking his religion in front of him, and that doesn't seem to bother him at all. He's being wraith cucked.
At this point, they attend a religious ceremony being officiated by Gul Dukat, and everybody on the station is in attendance for this.
What you want to do is go shopping at the market while this is happening. Really short lines.
Yeah. I mean, if you can find a store that's open, you're gonna sail through it.
Boy, that's true.
Kira is like so creeped out in this, and she notices somebody standing a little bit ahead of her in the crowd who's wearing a Bajoran blaster in a cat basket. And she grabs the gun and holds up the religious ceremony and is like telling everybody to get on the floor. This is a robbery.
I sit down on the floor and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you.
And Benyon and then like a few more of the red armbands start standing in between her and Dukat. And the one that breaks the camel's back is that Vedic Fala guy who says like,
enough, Nerys. Unless you're willing to kill us all.
We're all going to be like three little Fonzies here.
And my note I wrote is, what is the cost of stunning all these dopes?
Yeah, you got to start firing until your finger falls asleep.
Like until the trigger goes click, right? Like,
yeah.
Is there some reason why you can't just stun everyone? What jurisdiction is she in? She's talking to the guy that was the butcher of Bajor. Like, she could... If she could bring him in, like, the Bajoran provisional government would be thrilled to throw him behind bars, right?
What are the chances that the Bajoran militia person has a blaster in their cat basket set to kill for whatever reason, and it's unsecured with that little strap that keeps it from being pulled from someone else?
Yeah.
Like at anything but a very specific angle. Like, she's gotta believe that she could stun everyone, but that's never on the table. This is all for show.
I wanted this scene to go the way of her pulling the trigger and it being not a real gun or not loaded or something, and it having been a test. I just felt like this scene, like I believed all of the motivation up until she had the gun in her hand, and then I didn't believe any motivation after that, because I was like, what is stopping her from just mowing these idiots down?
And instead of mowing these idiots down, it is Kira that is mowed down with a clasped fist to the base of her neck.
Yeah.
Classic Star Trek knockout move.
Kirk chop to sleep. And Dukat, like, leans over her while she's asleep and twists the knife by saying, now don't you understand how much they love me? She's not awake, Dukat. That's not going to be meaningful to her.
What are you doing now?
When she comes to, she's partially undressed, which really ramps up the creep factor.
Yeah.
Dukat is tending to her wounds. And it's clear from this scene that perhaps making a martyr out of Dukat is exactly what he wants.
I think that, like, the she's going to be killed tension stays out of this episode, even here. But the fact that her clothing has been messed with introduces another kind of tension and another kind of fear. And the fact that he's still villain monologuing at her is really terrifying. And he's basically making the case, like, if I can convince you to join me, I can make it anywhere, right? Like, you're the last person that I that people would assume I could convince to join the Branch Pyrathians. So you're the first person I'm going to start on.
I should think that after what just happened in the temple, you'd realize that.
I feel like in the way that some characters have, like, power uniforms, whenever I see Kira in this level of undress, all she's ever done is kick a major amount of ass or blow up a pizza oven, you know? Like, she's rarely more dangerous than she is when she's wearing the white tunic with the holes in it, you know?
Yeah, right.
She presents as someone who maybe has been weakened from the moment, but we know from experience how dangerous she is.
She never loses her power in these moments, and I think that that's critical.
Can you think of a time when she has? Like, when she was really broken down?
She's had very few moments like that.
I think that's why you feel so safe with her character whenever she's in dangerous situations. She never,
right?
She never seems to be outgunned at any point.
She's one of the few characters in any media that I could think of being, like, alone in a remote place with 50 hostiles. And
yeah.
I'm not actually really sweating that much.
The alone part is key to that statement. Like, I feel like that's a special magic that Kira's got.
And I think that they tried to introduce, like, a little bit of fear by having that CSI scene where they were looking at her quarters and trying to figure out where she went back on the station, really pegging the needle for how she is in a remote place and they don't even know where to look for her. But I'm still not worried.
It's got to be weird to be in your twin station in what may or may not be your twin quarters.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there was always such a creepy factor to, like, in the Nagilam episode is what I'm thinking. Like, whenever you're on another galaxy class ship that may or may not be haunted.
Yeah.
There's a great level of discomfort there that whenever we're on Empok Nuor, I feel like the earlier episodes lean into that far more than this one, even.
Yeah.
The megachurch tunes, in a strange way, tunes out the creepiness of the haunted station.
Your anger is a challenge. I welcome it.
Another strange thing is the birth of the baby scene.
Yeah.
They go to Six Bay to enjoy this blessed event.
Anyone who's seen a Bajoran birth knows that this is going to take several hours. So everyone gets outside of the infirmary and they wait.
Yeah, and they wait. They've all brought some reading material.
There's a guy inside doing that weird, like, drum thing where you like move your hands together and the drums flick the little bead back and forth. We saw O'Brien and Bashir do this.
Yeah.
Very time consuming.
That's how Bajorans do this.
Bajorans don't push.
No.
That's what we learned.
They have to be very relaxed.
Yeah.
But maybe not in a case like this when the baby is in fact a Cardi.
The Paw Wraiths. They've sent us a sign.
What a reveal.
The wordless cut to Banyans are really great. And a lot of tension between Mika and Banyan in this scene. Because Gul Dukat, you know, sucks all the air out of the room and is talking to the faithful about how this is a miracle symbolizing the covenant that they've made with him, and that, you know, this really is Benyon and Mika's kid, but that the Pah Wraiths have changed the appearance of the baby in order to, you know, increase their faith. It's something we see all the time, like tangible evidence of how bad a leader is.
Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all.
Only making that leader's followers more fervent in their belief, right, that this is the leader for them.
God bless our president! I will die for him!
Because a redemption story is one of the most powerful inspirations to people and figures like that. I'm a flawed leader. I make mistakes. Right. I fucked all of you. Like, the forgiveness narrative is strong. And this scene, it's fucked up in a lot of ways. But one thing I wanted to talk about was the animatronic baby. I read was made by the Chucky people. The Child's Play people made the animatronic baby because you can't put loaf on newborns.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
That's good for newborns.
There are rules about it. This seems like the sort of thing that you don't need a rule for. You should just know. Someone fucked it up, and now there's a rule against it. Yeah. And that's why we've got Chucky babies on Deep Space Nine.
God, you know, occasionally how there'll be like a big PDF that goes around on the internet of like an auction of screen-used props from sci-fi things?
Oh my God. How much would you spend for this baby?
Cardassian animatronic baby, I feel like, is a big ticket item. If it still works, which it probably doesn't, you know, it's probably been in the drawer of some prop shop for years.
Yeah. They have powers beyond our understanding.
Yeah, but you know there's just a guy with a Futaba transmitter just out of frame working the sticks for the eyebrows and another one with the arms. And
yeah.
It's big fun. You don't see it a whole bunch because it does not look great, but Mark Alamo sells the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And it seems scary when he picks the baby up. That's crucial, right?
Yeah.
Like, if it looked silly enough to where he leaned in and grabbed the baby, you wouldn't care. But I couldn't rule out the idea of Dukat picking up the baby and throwing him to the other side of the promenade. Like, I was fearful of the baby's safety here.
Fear for the animatronic baby.
Yeah.
An amazing thing that Deep Space Nine made us feel.
Yeah. Yeah, so the scandal has been pivoted into Miracle,
yeah.
And Dukat has made a Z'Al for himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, Z'Al has been reborn.
This is a name that has not been evoked in this entire episode, but my mind went there first thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, he was so like mentally broken after that, and we don't get any evidence in this episode that he is like seeing people that aren't there or anything like that. Like,
he's pretty with it.
He's kind of a different Dukat than we've had lately.
He's like Jim Jones before the drugs, right?
Right. Kira has a conversation with Fala about whether or not this is a miracle. And it's a real, like, miracles are in the eyes of the beholder conversation, because he can cite the prophets disappearing that Jem'Hadar mm-hmm. fleet that was coming through the wormhole as something that she considers legitimately to be a miracle.
It becomes a real miracle measuring contest when it's like, you think the prophets or the Pah race have any problem making a baby if they wanted to? Look at all these other things that they're able to do.
Right.
Like, this is nothing to them.
And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, did you see all that Benyon react? That was crazy. Like, he knows.
Their spoons look exactly alike, Vedic Fala. Like, the shape, the depth,
the number of scales,
everything. Count the scales, Vedic Fala.
Yeah, and I think that this is a real thing, you know, like when somebody is presented with something that could shake their worldview to its very foundation, there is a very strong chance that their reaction will be to double down on their belief system. Like, mm-hmm. you cannot tell somebody that believes in the flat earth about all of the different real evidence that their belief system is bullshit, because that's not what it's about, you know?
I think it's a big part of a person's identity who believes in things like that to feel like they're being attacked.
Yeah. And also, like, the only immunity to the shame of acknowledging you made a mistake is never acknowledging you made a mistake. And
yep.
You can never talk them out of it because it's a belief system that self-reinforces against that.
Right.
Like, the dumbness of flat Earth is almost the point.
Yeah. Kira wants to talk to the parents and for some reason is granted that ability. There is no reason she should be permitted to do this. Only bad things can come of this.
Yeah.
So she does.
Yeah, she's like, so Benyon, you've prayed alone, one-on-one with Dukat, and he's like, sure. And she's like, what about your wife? Has she done that? And what position does Dukat like to pray in? Where does he like to finish praying?
Yeah, Kira knows what she's talking about because her mother also prayed with Dukat. So she would know.
Yeah.
You saw what you wanted to see.
We basically cut to Mika waiting for Dukat to talk to her. And whenever you set up a meeting near a door to space, I think that is that's Chekhov's door, right?
Yeah, the door of Damocles.
Right. Dukat shows up. They have their secret conversation about their previous secret encounter. And what you can't do is say the words,
if he ever asks me, I don't know if I can lie to him.
This is the last line of Cheaters for time immemorial.
Yeah.
This is the thing that blows up the cheating right here. It makes it a thing.
Yeah.
And Dukat goes, that's fine, baby. I understand.
Anyways, you just wait here in this airlock, and I'll go do something else.
Anyway, see ya. And when that door rolls closed, and Mika does not make any attempt to leave the airlock section, this scene is so weird because the door to space rolls open. You get the commensurate sucking that happens when that happens. And then, for some reason, the sucking stops and Mika's just on the ground with the door to space behind her. What happened there?
I think all of the air is out of the room at that point, and so there's no force to keep pushing her toward the hole.
She should be floating, Ben. You gotta get her into the harness.
I mean, I think that's what Dukat was going for. He was trying to alien queen her, but he used one of those airlocks where the door rolls to the side super slowly, and it depressurized in a way that didn't suck her out successfully.
Tell you one thing, you're never going to kill any alien queens that way.
No, that is not a way to get a bitch away from a little girl.
There's got to be another setting on the controls to blow the doors. Explosive decompression is what Dukat needed to do, and he should know better.
Yeah, he was the administrator of a station just like this. He should know which button you push for that.
Morn, dear sweet morn.
You here, buddy?
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
Dukat does such a shitty job that he doesn't even kill Mika. She survives this incident because Kira rolls up and closes the door behind her.
This was the miracle
moment
to me.
Yeah.
That Mika fucking survives.
The miracle is that she's pregnant again after this. Yeah. That was very surprising.
Oh, what a blessed day this is.
There is a scene after this where Dukat is praying, quote unquote, in his quarters alone and talking to the Pa-wraiths, and it hit me, like, he is the one person in this scenario that is not operating on faith. He is in fact in league with the Pa-wraiths. Like, they used him as an instrument of whatever they're trying to do, and he had one inside his body. Like, when he is talking to them here, he may in fact be in communication with a real alien.
Doesn't he have to bust open a doll and release more Pa-wraiths? Like, that's how you become in communion with Pa-wraiths. Like, he's run out of pinatas, right?
Farts don't stick around forever. They dissipate eventually.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, has that been the only example of interaction with Pa-wraiths when one of those things is busted open? They don't appear like the prophets to you in that way, right?
Well, we appear in lots of different ways. Sometimes we look like farts. Other times we look like characters from the show because we don't have enough money to cast new people.
Look at you applying logic to a religious belief. That's hilarious.
Don't you know how these things work?
Mika comes to in the infirmary, and a crowd is gathered again outside. Mika spending a lot of time in this infirmary lately, getting a lot of triangle pillow time. Kira makes her accusation public here in the public square.
Was Mika going to tell everyone that you're the father of her child?
Kira.
Is that why you tried to kill her?
Enough.
And it's enough to get her finally dragged away. This is the line that she crossed.
Yeah, so it's a get the Kool-Aid ready, guys. Like, that's what's coming next.
Yeah. This is the moment where I looked at the time code and I was like, there are 10 minutes left in this episode. What is going to happen? Because I kept on waiting to go back to the B story. Certainly the cavalry is on their way, right? What is the status of the rescue mission? With 10 minutes left, we should know by now. We do not.
Yeah, like, and that's a moment in almost any other episode of this show where they'd be saying, we're still a day away from Empok Nor, even at maximum warp, and somebody would have introduced some idea of, like, maybe we should kill Kira. Anyways, we'll decide after dinner, which is in 2 hours, you know?
Right. On the promenade, the dinner bell is rung, but it's not the usual time for services. It's because Tukat has gathered the flock together to tell them that he loves them very much. But he loves the Pa Wraiths more, and the Pa Wraiths have told him,
we must transform ourselves. Our corporeal bodies are not suitable for the task.
They gotta become forced ghosts.
Yeah, it's time to become a ghost army, and they're gonna do that the next morning. So, look, I've thought a lot about this. If I ever become a cult leader, I'm not going to give away the plan a day ahead of time. You're just asking your flock to disband and leave.
How far ahead of time did the Jonestown people know about the Kool-Aid? Because they knew it was poison, right? Like they
did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the morning of the massacre was when that senator was shot at the airport. And I think things came together very quickly after that.
Wow. It's been a long time since I've taken a deep dive into that.
I told you that was the first date I went on with my wife, right? We went to go see the Jonestown movie.
Jesus.
We held hands during the massacre.
The first date I went on with my wife was to get Italian food.
Yeah, I mean, that's a way that you could do that.
Yeah. So we get the passing out the pills scene. Very intense moment when Benyon takes one for him and one for the Bambino.
That is really true, right? Like, whenever you're threatening to kill a baby on a show, that really ratchets up the tension.
Yeah. And we cut to Kira's, the room where they're keeping Kira, where she takes a turn for the MacGruber and starts making life-saving inventions out of household materials.
Yeah.
She rips open a hole in the wall and, like, plugs it into the heat lamp in the room and blows the door. She's able to escape her confines and get out there. And she comes in for an attack vector from the second level of the promenade, where she literally, like, jumps off the catwalk onto Dukat. I thought it was very funny that I think she jumps, like, from basically the spot where they showed the guy welding the guardrail. It's almost like they anticipated, we might need a guardrail here in case anybody ever, like, jumps off of here.
This is a great action scene.
Yeah, pretty exciting. And the upshot is she knocks Dukat to the ground and he drops his promazine tablet and it gets confused with all of the other promazine tablets. So when he gets up, he doesn't know which one was his. And this is proof that he was going to fire a blank at his own head. And the faithful were all going to kill themselves. And finally, the scales fall from their eyes and they realize that he was using them the whole time.
None of you will ever know the love of
Americans. None of you!
We're told previously that the promazine, when you take it, it turns your body to dust in very short order.
Yeah.
Had we seen this scene of mass death and then mass dust?
Yeah.
That would have been insane to watch.
Totally crazy.
The mob gets incredibly angry and starts flinging their promazine tablets at Dukat, which seems very impotent as a rejection of what's happened here.
Yeah, you got to throw something heavier, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, I brought some rotten tomatoes. Let's throw these.
Benyon's still holding on to his baby, and I felt my second wave of fear for what's going to happen to that baby in this scene because I thought the baby was going to get thrown too.
Yeah, that would have been fucked up. Benyon, to his credit, does not throw the baby. And yeah, it looks like they're going to like tear him apart, but he's always got an escape figured out. He slaps his wrist. He Dominion style transporters out of there.
Is his Klingon ship outside? Is that where he's headed?
I don't know, because it's not a Klingon style transporter. It's not a Federation style transporter. It's a Dominion style transporter.
I'm confused.
He's like he's like working with Weyoun and Damar at this point.
Yeah.
Vedic Fala pops his pill.
Yeah, and it's not a fake. It's the real deal.
What if he'd fucking picked up the one pill? And he's like, Faith, gear up, wait. I kind of thought this was going to come overtake me a little bit more quickly than it is.
Fala, no.
I mean, I feel terrible, but I don't know if it's like symptomatic of the pill.
It may be like psychosomatic, like I just feel so bad about what's happened.
And I feel like I should be dying, so am I like doing this to myself or... Oh, boy. Okay, give me another one just to be on the safe side.
This actually speaks directly to what you were saying before, Ben. He would rather die than live as someone who has to change his mind about a thing.
Or live with the shame of having been as grotesquely wrong about something as he was.
So we cut to the little D, and Kira is just covered in dust. Like, like she looks like a vacuum cleaner bag just exploded all over her. Like she's been antiqued, like in Jackass.
Yeah, she's dusting herself off in the mess, and Odo is there, and he's like, "Well, bullet dodged, not having any faith." Anyways, right?
I'm not sure if you were aware, but my lungs are liquid, and the dust is really doing a number on them.
Oh my God, the AQI in this mess hall is off the charts. It's like Portland in September. Listen to my voice, it's all raspy.
You look behind them, Matt Damon is sitting within earshot, and he has like a dust outline of a baby at like around his bosom, like that he's frantically trying to wipe off. Like he didn't just kill a baby with that pill. You don't see a baby in this scene, Ben.
You sure don't. Did you like the episode, Adam?
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it, do it!
That's a hard question to answer. I know it's my job to answer it here. Here's the thing. Whenever you tell a story of religious condemnation without the corresponding religious self-examination, I think you're telling only half the story.
Mm.
And I think it is religiously hypocritical for Kira to be over there doing religious tourism, doing religious judgment, and never recognizing that it's her own religion that spawned this thing. They are related concepts.
Right.
She's judgmental for all the right reasons, like this is a cult and bad shit is going on there. She's hoping to interfere before the flock turns to dust. But take a little bit of fucking ownership about this. She never does. Because Bajoran religion interpretation is the healthy interpretation.
Right.
And it never hurts anyone.
Her confidence in that is never shaken in this episode.
I would have liked for that to have been shaken. And Much like Kira is rarely felt to feel danger in circumstances like this, she's rarely made to feel mixed feelings about her own beliefs here. Mm-hmm. I like it when she is made to really question shit like that. I think as close as she came was when she had to confront the reality of her mother's relationship to Gul Dukat.
Yeah.
And that's great stuff when they make her do that.
Yeah.
Why are there so few episodes where she does? This seemed like an opportunity for it that we don't get. And so I like that the episode builds Dukat back up into the heavy. I'm very excited for a sprint to the end where it's Dukat against Sisko. You can see that's the collision course that we're on. But you could have gotten heavier here and you didn't.
There's that word again, heavy.
Is how I feel about this episode. What about you?
I do really like the episode. I think that the lack of huge life-threatening stakes is a choice that I actually kind of appreciate, because I feel like you can dig into the issues more. It's not just like, hey, we're trying to kill you, fuck you, you're bad for trying to kill me. Like, because that's somewhat off the table, the theology of the Branch Pyrethians can be explored in a little bit more detail, and mm-hmm. we're not open to it, but we can be slightly more open-minded and hear them for saying what they believe in. Right. And I think that that's a really interesting writing choice, and I think it's a great Mark Alamo episode and a really good Nana Visitor episode. So I enjoyed watching it quite a bit.
I am appreciating them while they're here with us.
Yeah.
We're not going to get too many more of these, and I really do enjoy seeing them together.
I enjoy seeing Priority One messages in our inbox. Do you want to see what that is looking like today, Adam?
Yeah, let's take a look.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Wesley.
The boy.
And it is to all Wesleys everywhere. The message goes like this: to all Wesleys, 33 and younger, how's it going? Having a parent who's a huge nerd. To be an A, there hasn't been an embarrassing Star Trek story for a while now, so my dad named me the eponymous space boy and named my younger brother after one from a galaxy far, far away.
Wow.
He would have named my sister Seven.
Whoa!
Looking forward to Voyager and Enterprise?
Did this person send this P1 in after the Marin for this episode?
Yeah. Yeah, they got in there right under the gavel. Good job, Wesley. Here's the thing. Wesley, while we have committed to doing Voyager next, I think it's pretty clear from our Marin that we're going to go back and do TNG again, the remastered version.
Was Wesley's dad looking to name a theoretical girl child Seven because Wesley's dad was a Voyager nerd, or because Wesley's dad was a Seinfeld nerd? That's my question.
I don't think it's good to name women numbers, is what I'll say. Because I think you're setting them up for
being told they're a seven.
Yep. So good bit of restraint there. Yeah. What are you talking about? We haven't told a story of embarrassment for a while. Every episode.
Totally
is
fucking new.
Yeah.
Anyways, our next Priority One message is from Birdie, and it's to Birdie. And it goes like this.
Space, the final frontier. This is Deep Space Nine. Its continuing mission, to stay put and keep an eye on the wormhole. Best to keep the Dominion at bay, though they are looking a bit peckish. Hey, Worf, how about a game of Dabo? Dabo! Happy birthday to the Nanook of the North.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes you just have to wish yourself a happy birthday, and that's That's what happened here. Is Birdie to Birdie.
Is Birdie the Nanook of the North? I mean, I guess the implication is that that's what's going on here. Also, we missed this by a long time. This was supposed to go out on June 22nd.
I'm so sorry.
Another reminder that if you're trying to target a P1 for a specific date, get it in well in advance of that date. But we sure appreciate everyone who has gotten a P1.
I'm looking at our spreadsheet, Ben. I think we're totally filled until the end of Deep Space Nine.
That's wild.
Wow. Thanks to everyone who supports the show with a Priority One message. If you want to get in on the award show or Voyager, you know what to do.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
This is going to feel bad. I might have some regrets with my Shimoda, but it's obviously Gul Dukat, right? No one's having more fun than Gul Dukat here. He's a cult leader.
Yeah, he's the king.
I don't think anyone's having much fun here.
No.
But if anyone is, it's the one with all the power. So it's Gul Dukat for me. What about you?
Gul Dukat for me too, especially for the moment where he's like pawing on the floor at the different pills.
Yeah.
Very funny moment to me.
I love trying to figure out the right pill. You know, when you're Gul Dukat's age, you're probably taking your poison out of the plastic dispenser with the days of the week.
Oh yeah, you got the
That's
little
how you keep them straight.
Little row.
Yeah.
Gotta get that gold press light. Get that gold press light. Am I right? Ooh, yeah. Am I right?
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my Birdie. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month. For a limited time at ritual.com/scarves, start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves. For 25% off. I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz. And this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lighter. Get that gold press lighter.
Platinum. Gold press lighter. It's a lot of yamak sauce. Well, Adam, why don't you head over to gach.biz/game.
Speaking of Little Rose, we've got 10x10, don't we?
We sure do.
We're currently on square 26, a couple squares ahead, the Naked Now.
Wow.
That would be tub time again, Ben, a type of show I'm not looking forward to repeating, so let's not roll a two.
I had a lot of fun last time we did a tubisode. Personally,
you would.
Episode 10 of season 7 is the one we will be doing, and it's called It's Only a Paper Moon. Traumatized by the loss of his leg, Nog retreats to the holographic world of 1960s lounge singer Vic Fontaine. It's interesting that it's 60s. I always had 50s as my estimate of what Vic Fontaine's era was.
I mean, that's part of what the joke was for us. Like, his home time period is far more problematic.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it is 60s, but like early 60s, or maybe the captured writer doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about, which we've often found to be the case.
Hey, cool cats, I'm just in here dodging the Vietnam War.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I cannot dodge the responsibility of rolling this die, Ben.
No.
And so I must, as nervous as I am. All right. I've, in typical fashion, rolled a one.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which does not get us out of danger. It only gets us closer, Ben. We're on square 27, and it's on the doorstep of a tub show. The bath mat, if you will.
Yeah.
Just outside. So, great.
Cool.
Ever present bathtub danger ahead for the episode after next. But the next episode, as it is, just another regular old one for us.
All right. Well, that's a big, exciting episode. I think this is one of those ones that has a reputation of being a pretty special Deep Space Nine episode. So nice that we're not defiling it by being naked men sitting in water while we review it.
No, we defile the episodes in myriad ways.
If you would like to help support that defilement, you can head to MaximumFun.org/join. Become a sustaining member of the Greatest Generation. We'd really appreciate that. You can also support our show in lots of free ways, like if you're an Overcast listener, click the little star button on the episode, or if you're an Apple Podcast listener, give us a 5-star review and leave a nice comment about the show, or recommend the show to a friend on social media and follow our social media accounts. We've got Instagram and Twitter accounts at Greatest Trek. Those are run by our buddy, the Card Daddy, Bill Tilly.
Yeah, another way to support the show is buying hundreds of cell phones and downloading the episodes repeatedly on them.
Yeah, become a click farm.
Gotta thank, more than ever, really, thank Adam Ragusea for all of his work over the years making the great music you hear as our interstitials and our theme music based on the great original work of Dark Materia.
Yeah. Hey, did you know that there is a Discord server for Friends of DeSoto now?
I did know that.
It's drunkshimoda.com is the Discord server.
Hey, is that the place that Facebook can go to? I don't know anything about Discord.
I don't either. We've had some debates about if there was a way to offer an alternative to Facebook. you know, like if we could become Mark Zuckerberg but not evil and build some website. I don't think that's really something that we're capable of. So I don't know.
There's 31 people in our Discord right now. I just went into it. Oh no, it's asking me for my birthday. Okay, I'm retreating.
It's not for us. It's for friends of DeSoto who want to talk to other friends of DeSoto. So go check out drunkshimoda.com or the Facebook groups or the Reddit sub or whatever.
Do that. Make a buddy. Make a friend of DeSoto, won't you?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, Adam, that's it. I'm done. I want to get off this damn mic.
All right. Well, I guess you've got to go pack up your shit.
I do.
With that, we'll be back just next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which neither of us can't possibly dodge.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.